Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. All right, it is Christmas break for my children this week, which means that you all will get the pleasure, most likely, of hearing them laugh, cry, joke, fight, scream, whatever it is in the background, and I will get the pleasure of trying to focus through it. It's also been fascinating during this Christmas break to sort of consider the weather. Today is December 23rd for me at the time of this recording. For you, it is most likely something like New Year's Eve or thereabouts. And the last week or so, every day in the last week has hit the high 50s, nearly 60 degrees Fahrenheit. That is highly, highly unusual for this time of year. As a matter of fact, I don't know that I have ever in my life seen it this warm the week of Christmas. And looking at the weather app, on Christmas Day, at this current moment, we are projected to have thunderstorms, which my guess is that that would be the first time in recorded history that we had thunderstorms on Christmas Day. Though maybe there were one or two other anomalous times. Either way, it is wild. It's completely unseasonal. And I know that many throughout the U.S. and throughout the world are currently experiencing that. So I'll have to see, maybe report back on that once Christmas has come and gone. It's been a pleasure the last few days to have Kellen on the podcast. It was so cool to have him here. You know, it had been a year since he joined us. And so it was just really refreshing to have him back on the podcast for a few episodes. And my hope is that we'll have him back again and it won't take another year. Hopefully we'll have him visiting a few times throughout then. Depending on his schedule and his desire, I let him know he is free to come back as frequently as he would like. And so hopefully we get that. It was interesting to remember, you know, how things go when you have two of you on the podcast. It felt like we did not get through as much as we wanted to in the amount of time. We said less in more time, in a way, just because you get so used to being able to talk to each other and there's nuances. And anyway, that was just very interesting. We didn't get through all the topics we wanted to talk about looking back at 2025. And looking forward to 2026, we really didn't get a touch on all that much either. We just hit a couple of different topics, gave some sort of, you know, ideas of what we might be looking for, but I feel like it would have been nice to have been able to go so much deeper into what 2026 might bring. And so we'll see. I may do a couple of more episodes on that, both the look back and the look ahead, after I wrap up this sort of segment where I'm revisiting the first 8 episodes. But we'll see once that comes and once we're kind of into January. I apologize for the audio issues in the episodes with Kellen. He was very quiet and kind of garbled. It was a little hard to hear him. It's just a reminder of, you know, adding complexity to the audio setup and what that can do to the final product. So my apologies for that. All right, let's dive in and talk about episode 5. This was the first episode where we kind of shifted from talking about why collapse happens to how it happens. And there was still plenty of the why conversation in it, but it was the first one that we introduced any how. And Kellen was really excited about that because, like he said in that episode, you know, there's a lot of background information, and he just was like, I want to know what is this going to look like and how is it going to affect me and how does it actually play out? What's interesting is catabolic collapse is one theory, right? It's one way in which collapse could happen. Collapse does not necessarily have to be through this sort of catabolic change that we talk about in episode 5. Collapse could be much more swift and sudden. Where John Michael Greer talks about catabolic collapse as something that could take, you know, decades, if not even longer. I noticed, at one point during that episode, I said something like, we don't know when this process will begin or how long it will take. And I look back and I'm like, why did I say that? This process has begun. You look around and we are very clearly in the process of catabolic collapse. It is slow. It is sort of methodical. It has ups and downs, but we, I think, undoubtedly are in the midst of catabolic collapse. You take a look at the types of cuts that are being made to programs right now, and why are those cuts being made? Or at least, why are they claiming those cuts are being made, right? The Trump administration in the U.S. made these massive cuts to things like USAID, They've, talked about Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. So all these welfare programs, making cuts to food stamps and SNAP. And those are things that we're going through. And as we head into the new year, we're going to be going up against cuts to SNAP again. There may be another government shutdown due to it. Cuts to the federal employment workforce, et cetera, et cetera. So there was all of these cuts that DOGE was claiming to make. Again, why? Well, because our debt is too high and it's something that we need to pay off. That is catabolic collapse. We are saying we have grown too big, we have spent too much, too fast, and we cannot keep up with it. And we have to get rid of the capital, the systems that we have in place now, in order to make way or continue growth or to be able to prop up the system we already have. And that will just continue to accelerate. Now, I think catabolic collapse in this case is doubling down or accelerating because they're not actually making those cuts to try and pay back the debt or to slow down the debt. Many of those cuts are being made for cultural reasons, for political gain, for lining their own pockets. They are ramping up the spending in other places, disrupting trade with tariffs, and then using tariff income to keep Argentina afloat. So anyway, there's a lot going on there that I think actually makes it worse. They're simultaneously removing some of our capital, not to prop up other parts of the system, but to tear down other parts of the system. Anyway, getting into the actual sort of theory of catabolic collapse itself, I listened to today both episode 5, and then I zoomed forward and listened to episode 36, in which we took a deeper look into catabolic collapse, and we actually talked about John Michael Greer's paper on it, and we talked about like the formulas and the numbers, and I loved that episode because I just loved being able to think about it that way. Whereas in episode 5, we just used a really simple example to introduce the idea. And that was, of course, this idea of Kellen being this terrible homeowner that gets himself in a whole lot of trouble. And I think that example sticks. And it's one that I think about. I think about it in my own life. I think about it as I see it in other people's lives and in other examples. It is human nature to put ourselves in these situations where we spend more and more, where we, if we have more income, we spend more income. We increase our quality of life where possible, and especially in the capitalist system on a large scale. Like if we're doing this on individual scales, and we're not saying everybody does, but most people do if they can. If they have the money, a lot of people are going to spend it. If it's human nature to do that, then under capitalism, where that behavior is actually incentivized, and individuals working in the collective create a societal system where we do that, where we grow and grow in complexity and quality of life. And this just makes the capital machine so large, so hungry that it devours everything in its path. I would recommend if you went back and listened to episode 5, in order to listen to this episode, also go back and listen to episode 36. We get into the idea of waste and how big of a deal it is, the waste that current capital produces and the requirement to produce more capital just to maintain the existing capital that gets lost due to waste. And I think it just lays out so clearly how easy it is to hit a point in which we can't keep up with it. Now, we also made a point in episode 36, which is one that we didn't really get to in episode 5, and I wish we kind of had, which is that, again, this is only one way in which collapse can happen. Catabolic collapse does not really include the introduction of escalations and problems. It's very methodical in talking simply about the inputs and outputs and the requirements of the system to stay afloat. But we're not talking about the fact that yes, you might have, this intricate machine. Let's say it's a grandfather clock with all of its, dozens or hundreds of cogs and small components that all have to work in tandem perfectly to keep the clock working. Well, what if someone just takes a freaking sledgehammer to the clock, right? And climate change is, a sledgehammer that we're taking to the clock. Politics, wars, natural disasters, terrorist acts, disease, COVID-19, that was a big sledgehammer to the system, right? So as we're going through this long, methodical fall that is catabolic collapse, which all but guarantees a downward trajectory over time, we're also getting these intermittent sledgehammers to the system, which really, you know, introduce these complexities and problems. When you add those sort of complexities into an already very, you know, capital hungry, needy system that's struggling for the resources it needs to provide, it creates these sort of shocks that can make that system seize up. And when a system seizes up, it requires an influx of capital to kickstart. I think about that with COVID-19, for example. The system seized, right? It froze. The whole world froze for a month, where we sat there and we went, what is going on and what is next? Employment froze. Purchasing froze. Movement and travel and production and transportation froze. There were price shocks. And to get that moving again, it took months. And it took an influx in all sorts of things. In the U.S., there was massive payments made out to every American, right, as stimulus. There was this PPP program, I believe what it was called, the payment protection program, something like that, where employers were given money to keep their employees working. There was an influx to welfare and all of these different things that had to be created to keep it flowing. And that was an influx in capital requirement. And it took us a long time to absorb that. We still haven't. We're still suffering from the inflationary effects. Now, it might be oversimplifying it to say that that's the only reason that we have inflation, but that sure kicked it off. And that was from one sort of event that seemingly came out of nowhere. That was not baked into John Michael Greer's calculations on how catabolic collapse functions. So I do wish we had talked a bit more about that in episode 5. Catabolic collapse is a way that collapse happens. It is not the only way. It's sort of a visualization of it. It's like the anchor around our neck that drags us down, while at the same time, we're receiving cuts from 1,000 different places, some of them quite large and blunt all at once. Climate change is, of course, the big noose hanging around our neck to sort of finish us off in the next several decades, if these other things don't first. One other difference potentially that we could have made to episode 5 was, along with explaining the example of Kellen, who was making a ton of money and bought a mansion and was trying to keep it afloat with all of his, you know, servants and workers and all of these people who kept his house afloat, and suddenly he had to start giving up some of those complexities. It may have been interesting to compare that to someone who lives a very relatively simple lifestyle, right? A person who, you know, instead of maybe having a 10 or 15,000 square foot mansion with servants and all of that, you know, lives in a 700 square foot studio apartment, and describing the ways in which they are able to manage that household with the limited amount of capital that they might have. That person who had purposely, perhaps, kept things steady and simple, even though their income may have been much, much less, they were able to carefully budget and ensure that the household had everything that it needed in order to survive, as sort of a way to show that less can be more. We did talk about how, you know, Tom Murphy mentioned this idea of having various pets, right? And how a parent might not just jump to giving their child a pony, but might start with a gerbil and slowly teach that child how to take care of an animal and then bump them up. And we talked about how they would maybe get bumped up to a kitten with a little more responsibility, and then a dog, and then a goat. And maybe eventually after that child showed that they could, you know, take good care of that animal, that they were responsible, that, okay, now we can take a look at a pony. That's sort of the idea that we're talking about here, where this person in the smaller house has shown that they can take great care of that gerbil or that kitten. Whereas us, who have been given the pony in our society, are showing so clearly that we cannot take care of it. What might the person who, or the society, who can show that they can take great care and be responsible with the lesser, what might that person or society do with more? Is it human nature? Is it always, you know, if you gave 1,000 societies fossil fuels, is every one of those societies going to do what we did? And this is just a thought exercise. It's just something that I'm curious about. Is there a people or a society that looks ahead and handles that responsibly, that from the very beginning says, this is an incredible resource? It is a limited one, though, and we need to spend it wisely. Let's grow at a responsible rate. let's ensure that we're staying ahead of our growth with our technology. Like, I just think naturally that I don't think that can happen. Like, in order to get the technological growth, there has to also be the growth in other types of capital. You have to have the growth in human resources to manage that capital, which then gives you the ability to come up with the new technologies. You need more humans putting their heads together to come up with the technologies. So at some point, you inevitably are going to hit that limit. You're going to hit that point in which you're out spending your resources, or you're not coming up with the technologies to grow past fossil fuels, for example. That society may never have been able to break through to nuclear fusion, ours very well may not ever either, you know, or even renewables and the ability to create wind or solar power. I think it could have been reached at a much less reckless rate than we did. If you gave this power to 1,000 societies, I'm sure many of them would do better than we did. But anyway, this sort of thought exercise to me just kind of evokes the idea and the sense that collapse is inevitable. It is cyclical. It perhaps answers the Fermi paradox. All right. Anyway, I think, again, this episode was well-timed in having this part of the discussion. After this, we now go into 6, 7, and 8, where we're talking about very specific parts of the systems that we have that help determine the way in which collapse plays out, right? Politics, economics, and then, of course, again, the noose hanging around our neck, climate change. Thanks for being here. I hope you have a happy new year. Let's hope for a tolerable 2026. Who knows? Maybe it will be better than 2025. I raise a toast to each of you. Thank you for being here and enjoy your evening. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.